Kia ora, ta alofa, hi, and welcome to episode 11 of Tanuri Manga's Team Talk, proudly sponsored by Victual, New Zealand's first health and wellbeing supplement that combines ancient Māori and Pacifica wisdom and ingredients. And today on my show, we're very fortunate to have a special guest who's had a very successful international rugby year, Bundi Aki. Malo lava uso.
Hello, Fozo. Hello.
Good to have you on us. Thanks for making time.
Nah, thank you very much for having me. Privileged to be on Hills.
Oh, nice. What time is it over there?
It is 8 o'clock here at night time. Yeah.
Oh, so. Getting cold?
It is getting very cold. It's getting very cold here. Putting on all the warm clothes nice. Every morning.
Nice. Now I've got. I haven't finished my intro with you. So now, obviously, you started with Counties Monaco, and I saw you with the Paramahui Club. You played for the Chiefs in 2013 and 14, winning a Super Rugby title in 2013. You made the move to Connacht after you'd finished with the Chiefs in 2014 and won the Pro 12 competition in 2015 and 2016 season. You're named player of the season that year. You've gone on to represent Ireland, and you were selected for the 2021 British and Irish Lions that toured South Africa, which is an awesome achievement. And then you've just recently finished with an unbeaten November series where you've beaten the All Blacks.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty fortunate and lucky to be in part of that group anyway. So, no, look, whenever you play the ABs, it's always a tough one and a big one. So I'm just happy to be on the right side of it and be able to get the win anyway.
We have to chat about the ABs, you know, and that win and what it was like in the lead up to that week. You know, I think we talked earlier in the week, just had a quick catch up. But can you just, you know, run us through what it was like beating the ABs? You know, again, it's, you know, third time, it's your second time, you're undefeated, you're 100, running at 100% against the ABs, which is, like I said before, no mean feat. But what was it like in that week leading up to it?
I think everyone knew how important that week was. Like, I think I said it earlier in the week, like, the All Blacks, whenever you hear the All Blacks, they know that the All Blacks are in town. You're in for a big one and you got to prepare very well and make sure that no stone is unturned to make sure that you perform at your best and making sure you put your best foot forward, because the ABs are no easy team to be, and that's the reason why they've been on top for so long and been so successful for so long. So the week was good. I think the lads were very calm, but also very they pushed each other throughout training. And they made training very tough. And I think the lads were very good at getting across our work throughout the week and making sure that everyone understood how we wanted to play the game and how we were going to get the win together.
Oh, nice. And for you, how was it for you? You know, like I said, you know, you faced the All Black, then the Haka twice, and you've steered it down and you know, you've come out on top. You know, what's it like when you're looking down there at some players that you know and you're looking at the haka?
Man, it's all, like, I think the first time we got faced the haka, the biggest goosebumps I had wasn't, like, I had nerves going through me and I was so nervous watching them. You know, when you're growing up as a kid, you watch dad and you do it all the time with them when you're watching it through TV, obviously watching you as well. So when you're watching the game against the All Blacks and you're watching them doing it against you, it was surreal. It was cool. It was an honor to be able to stand in front of it and to be able to witness the mana they bring through the haka. And you obviously know the history behind it, the meaning behind it. So, you know, it's that more important when you're looking at it and seeing the front foot. It's very cool. So, I never take the haka any lightly when every time they do that. So I was pretty fortunate to be able to see it twice.
And I suppose, you know, the way Ireland are playing, I watched, you know, when you, I think you played Japan first, you know, your open style, the way you're playing so quick. Is that a bit of a change of a style, or is that just something that's, you know, kept carrying on and evolved, you know, with the seasons that you've been there?
It's been... hasn't been I wouldn't say has. It's something that we've been trying to involve for that the last year or two, or maybe 3 years. Because, as you know, international rugby are won by small margins. And if you're not on those small, if you're not winning those small margins and you try and play those a quick rugby and play a bit of, you know, enjoyment rugby that people love to see, you could easily be on the back four, you could easily be behind the post more than you actually want to be. So I think we've been evolving as a group, we're building as a group for the last couple of years. The boys are starting to understand how we want to play, how we see the game, because I think that's how rugby should be played at times. And didn't we also love to be able to go back to what we know, which is a lot of our kicking, which we have a lot of good strengths of with Johnny and Murr and Jammer and all of them. So we know at the back of our heads that we can play that style of game if we want to play that style of game. But also the lads are just enjoying that kind of rugby that we're playing at the moment, to be able to be freely, do what we want to do, but also stay in the system.
Staying in the system. Jeez.
Yeah.
It's funny hearing you say that.
Yeah. I got in trouble a few times not staying in the system. It's a learning that I've been able to, I had to learn throughout the years of my rugby career. So,
yeah. It's good. We're always learning. Yeah. And, you know, it's been great to watch the confidence, you know, of obviously your team. You know, to play that style, you have to have confidence, because, like you said, you know, one mistake and you're playing that quick style, you could be, you know, down the other end. Yet when you're playing with confidence and your skill level's high, and, you know, that's something that I noticed from yourself, you know, your confidence that you're playing with, angry confidence, I think I text you through, you know, and that's, you know, but that's exactly how you have to be at international rugby, you know, and, you know, you're looking very confident around the way you're playing. So my hat's off to you.
No, thanks, Us. You know, I've learned a lot from you, so you should know that you got to make sure you stay in the system to be able to get that confidence to know what you're doing, and you'll get the right attitude to get on the right foot anyway. So.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Now, the World Rugby's just released this new law change, you know, with eligibility. You know, obviously you signed, I know you've signed through to this World Cup with Ireland. Shucks, I'm sure you'll still be a young man, you know, 3 years after that. you know, what do you think about that, and what do you think that'll mean to the especially the Pacific Islands? And, you know, will we see Bundi Aki maybe don the blue of the Manu Samoa for the 2027 World Cup?
Jeez, I'll probably be in a wheelchair. I'll be an old man. So, no, I think the rule change in there has been, I reckon, it's going to benefit the Pacific Islanders very much. Not so much of the players, obviously the much of the players, but the community around the Pacific people back at home in Samoa, Tonga, and Fiji. You know, now they've got a variety of players to be able to pick from, and I mean a high quality players as well. So, man, it's only going to make the game better, I think. I'm certainly looking forward to seeing or watching, or if I'm lucky enough to be able to be in that World Cup in France. I think we had Ireland have Tonga in our pool, and geez, the amount of players that Tonga have.
Yeah, timing up.
Yeah, just good. That's just, you can't get any better than that, man. The names that have been throwing out, I'm just like, oh my goodness. So I honestly was totally happy for the boys that did it. I think it was Dan Leo and a group of guys that been pushing from years back. I think Fui Maono's back then, just, you know, voicing out their opinions. Man, I think it's like now they're seeing the fruition come out of their hard work and all the backlash that we're getting when they're doing it at their time. But like, they're doing it for the guys who are now for like in our time, and hopefully the guys who are going to be able to change, go and play for their birth countries, hopefully they can inspire the young ones coming through as well. So I think it's going to be a good cycle of something good to come. So I'm definitely looking forward to it.
I totally agree. And, you know, I think about, you know, our good friend Fritz Lee, you know, played a lot of sevens, and but never has been able to play international rugby, which I think it, You know, he's been a superstar for Clermont.
Yeah, in France.
Yeah, exactly. In France. And, yeah. And now, you know, again, a bit like yourself, I wonder if his body will get him through the way he plays.
Exactly. Man. I think it's, I don't know what the proper rule is. I don't know if, is it, do they start their 3-year stand down by January, or do they, is it, they have, if they haven't been playing for the last certain amount of years, then they can play straight away?
Yeah, so it's already, so your 3 years started from your last, you know, representation of another country. So, you know, I think they'll be ready straight away. I know.
Yeah, so there you got August. Like, you know, think about the guys that we play. We've got Augie as well, who's been playing in Japan, so he's looking for it now. You got, obviously, Sailisi with Charles.
Yeah.
Nangi Lo Mappe going across, Francis.
Malakai's done it all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, now you're just, it's, World Cup just looks different now, you know?
Yeah, well, it does,
And, you know, us, like, whenever you play against Pacific Islanders, you never, like, you know, you always hate playing against them because you just know that you're going to come out with sore bodies. Now you're definitely going to hate it because it's going to be sore bodies and you're going to be tired as well. They're just like, oh, man.
Oh, yeah, and you know how it is when you play against your own tour. There's always a little bit extra in there. So.
Yeah, exactly.
You made a lot of people proud, and back here on this side, you know, your family and the players that have been around you, and obviously the coaches that have been involved with you to see you strive and achieve what you've achieved. And we'll get into that a little bit more. But now, I've been to Connacht. We have to talk about that. And you're a very proud Connacht person. I was part of that famous game where Toulon went there and the kick right in front of the post was going through them, and it came back through the same way, and it was going down the other way. The massive wind there, like, I've been a part of Wellington and the southerlies, but that was something that I've never been, I've never seen before, that wind. Is it still there in the racetrack, or is it the dog racing track?
It's still there. Yeah, it's still there. The wind, weather is still there. Nothing's changed. People hate coming down to where we are. And I think that's the unique part of Connacht anyway, is it just, like, reminds me of back at home in counties. You know, people don't like coming down to our stadium to play us, and it just gives us a bit of an edge to be able to play against big teams. I've seen that video as well of your, I think it was a Contepomi that kicked it.
Yeah,
he kicked it and went through the post, went back out. So you can only understand what the wind and the storm can do here.
Yeah, no. And like, you've been there a long time now, and what are the things that you love about Connacht? Because I've heard you talk about it, that, you know, in that kind of way.
Man, to be honestly, I've grown into Connacht. I love being here. They are very, they're a small community who love to help each other out. They love helping your families, making you feel welcome, even though you're not from there, but they definitely make you feel like you're part of their family and part of their community, which I felt like, you know, it's such a cool feeling when you come to a different side of the country, you're fairly new, but to be able to get that sort of comfort from them makes you want to play for them a bit more and do a bit more for them. And it just reminds me of home, you know. In county's the same thing. You know, it's a lot family orientated. You don't get much opportunities, but you make the opportunity yours, and, you know, you go with it with two hands and take it.
Yeah, I think, like you say, the similarities, isn't it? You know, the big clubs of Ireland, you know, the Leinsters, the Munsters, Ulster as well. And then you have Connacht that people, you know, didn't really think of as such. You know, it's not held up there, but you've changed that in your time there. You know, what's been a one of the major changes that you've seen there?
I think when I got here, and I've heard the stories behind a few years back when Connacht, Ireland were trying to make the four provinces become a three province country. So they're trying to get rid of Connacht. I heard about that story, I came here when Pat was here, and he had a good vision about this, about the club that we're at, and to be able to have the boys back his vision and be able to believe in that vision, you could only, you know, just like us in counties when we won the Ranfurly Shield, you know, we've never won it before, but it only takes a group of people to believe and understand what we believe in, and then you just take and create a culture within your group, and once you get that culture going, then you sort of get more players in, more players to understand, and you know what you can do in the big clubs, you can certainly do in the smaller clubs, and you can certainly tip over those big clubs when you on your good day as well. So yeah,
it's funny, eh? That does sound a lot like that time when, you know, New Zealand rugby were wanting to cut teams from you know, the NPC at that stage, and
exactly,
yeah, you know, I think counties and Tasman were the ones that were, or Marlborough, the, back then they were the ones that were about to get cut, and they had to fight. I think yeah, one or two might have been one too.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and
that's
you're
exactly
right,
what it was like. That's exactly what Connacht as well was. I think they did a big march into the RFU HPC as well. So you could just see the passion that they have for the club. And I know you've been to our club with the dog tracker. It's very, very humble. it's cool. It's unique. It's very unique. So that's what I like about it.
Well, it keeps you grounded out. It makes you, I think, as you said, it makes you want to strive a bit more. It tells a good story. You get guys coming in, they understand. Your back's against the wall, eh?
And regardless, exactly. Your back's against the wall from the get-go.
And what I've seen, you've taken it to the highest level now. Your Samoan background and how you've incorporated that into the teams that you've been a part of. Can you talk a little bit about that? I've seen even the Irishman do a few buckies here and there.
Oh, man. It was because we incorporate it in Connacht. So obviously you try and create a culture for everyone to buy in. And we did it the year before we won, into the year we won as well. So when we won, we had the chance and the mili mili and the bucky buckies, and the boys enjoyed it, and it was something different as well. So when we were winning, we had a song going with it, and the boys were buying into it, and they just felt like, you know, that's part of us. You know, this is a unique group that, you know, like you said, like when you win a Ramfordshire together, this is the only group that you're going to be with winning that Ramfordshire. You can sit back and be like, oh, actually, we played together, we won that Ramfordshire. It's the same as Connacht. Like Pat always talks about, you know, this is the team you're going to look in a few years' time and be like, we actually won the first Pro 12 in Connacht. You can look each other in the eye, and that was such a great team. And he obviously built that culture, and he brought in the mealy mealy bucky bucky as well for the boys, and man, they went with it and they enjoyed it. And the Irish boys saw it when I got called in, and we brought it in as well. And that same year we brought it in, we had a great year for Irish rugby. That was the same year we played the All Blacks here in Aviva, and we came on top there. And I think the year before that, the year before that, they played them in Chicago. So it was a very good year for us. And you try and pick it up and try and keep it going, try and get the vibe going. And then at the same time, when you're doing the same thing, you try and think of different ways to be able to create that kind of vibe and create the freshness out of it. So no, it was cool. The boys thoroughly enjoyed being a part of that.
Oh, look, it's great to see too, when you're on this side of the world, how obviously, you know, our culture and, you know, the Samoan culture or the Pacific Island culture being incorporated into, you know, the teams like Ireland and that. And yeah, you just sit back and you just realise, you know, you've had influence, you know, and they've bought into it because they've made it part of their culture. And like I said, it's just proud to see. What are some of the things, what are you missing the most from home, you know, as you've been over there for a while now?
Yeah, I've been there for 8 years now. I'm missing, obviously, I'm missing my family, missing my family loads, mum and dad, especially the oldest one. You know, the oldest one is still in Christchurch. Yeah. So I miss her loads. We try and talk through. It's a good thing about technology these days, you can video call and talk through. And I miss the family. That's probably the biggest one. And then the food, you can't go wrong with the food in New Zealand. So Kayla and the kids are over in New Zealand at the moment, and I've really put my list through to make sure they bring back some goods for me. And definitely the food mostly, and just the family. Other than that, everything's pretty much the same, you know what I mean? Everything's the same.
You can't, they're probably, all your nutritionists on that side will be happy that you can't be too close to the food, are?
Oh, man, I actually got a story as well. What was it? Pat's year, I think. The year before. And he gave me a week off. I remember he gave me a week or two weeks off, just over under 2 weeks. And he's like, oh, I'll give you 2 weeks off. And I was like, sound it. I'm going to go to New Zealand and, you know, I'll go see the family. I didn't come back for like 2 months.
Oh, yeah.
I lost track of time. Oh, man. I was actually quite lucky as well that Pat was so good to me. And he's obviously understandable. He understands the island boys. And he had a bit of leeway for us. But no, that was the only time he gave the leeway. And that was it.
You one and done, huh?
One and done, and that's it.
Nice. Oh my goodness! You do get a bit homesick sometimes, huh?
Yeah, you do. You know? It's just having you're so used to having being around a loud family. Obviously, my family household, like your brothers and sisters, your sister's kids, they're all in the same building, and mum and dad are there, and you know, it's no shortage of loud music or loud people yelling, you know, where over here when you're with your family, it's a bit quiet. It's nice to have your family, but you sort of miss getting a wake-up call from your mom. Not really a wake-up call. It's just her yelling in your ear to get up and go do something. So, yeah, those are the things I really miss from her.
Oh, no. And, I remember those early days, you know, when you first came and started, when I first came across you, and I loved watching you in Paramahoi, and you know, people were telling me you were halfback. I said, shucks, does anyone get to see the ball outside of him? Or, so I can see why they moved you to the wing. You're just so great to watch. Fiery, oh. Though, fiery.
Man, like these guys here don't believe I played halfback. I used to tell them, man, I used to be a halfback. They go, you must have been the slowest halfback ever. And I go, no, honest, I was a halfback then.
Oh. And I remember you telling me that you'd always try and put yourself at halfback in the trails. Yeah, you can't just get to every third ruck.
Oh, not with the way the game's played these days. She's only there in every fifth or sixth. Oh, gosh.
Oh, man, I can understand. Jeez. And then, so obviously, you know, you made your debut with Ireland. And what was it like? I know we had a really good chat, you know, when you were going through that decision. And, you know, that was, you know, for me, you know, you're coming when you're back in New Zealand and, you know, we had a good catch up when you were thinking about it, you know, and ultimately what was the thing that really made you decide that you're going to go with Ireland?
Honestly, that chat that we had when I came back to New Zealand, obviously I always speak about it. When you're a kid growing up in New Zealand, you always want to play with the ABs, and that's natural for a kid growing up in the country they were born in. But like you said, with that big chat we had, it's just trying to put things into perspective and the realization what you've done. And obviously the time I was with Connacht, I looked at it as in they've helped me so much from when I arrived. The community was so good to me. They embraced me and my family. And that sort of helped my decision. But the chat that we had over in New Zealand was huge. I felt that was the chat helped me a lot with my decision on staying here in Ireland. And that was ultimately the reason why I stayed here, was because of our chat. And I thought that your chat obviously helped me a lot in my decision. That's why I'm so grateful for your help back then and to this day. And I honestly appreciate it so much and grateful for it. Because who knows, like, you know, in hindsight, you always try and talk, but who knows where I would have been if I came back. But I'm certainly happy where I am. Nothing taken for granted. I've absolutely tried and take everything that I have to this day with both hands and still try and achieve things that I know that I can achieve and trying to keep improving myself as a person and as a player. I still think I'm only still getting things done and still got a lot to achieve.
Nice. Yeah, look, I think you're right. I suppose now that I'm involved with the Samoan team, like a Pisa Samoa, We're disappointed of your, of my chat with you. No, because you've achieved so much, you can't. I think we talked about, it was never a given that you were going to play for Ireland. You just, you still had to work for it. And it would have been the same if you came back here and the same for Samoa. So, you'd got your foot in the door and you might as well see where it goes. You know, that's exactly it.
And like you said, it was like when we were talking about it, and it's like nothing was given or nothing's guaranteed. And it was just the same chat that when I first got introduced to you to be able to come back to rugby, nothing was guaranteed. But you gave me the foot to get in there. And that was the same thing with here in Ireland. You know, they gave me a foot to be able to proceed in my rugby career. And like you said, it's nothing's guaranteed there. And I just thought, once your foot's in there, just keep going and see where it takes you. And I'm certainly grateful for this country, privileged to play for them and honoured to play for them. And certainly don't regret anything that I've done so far.
No, you shouldn't either. Because you've achieved so much. And, like you said, you've still got a lot to achieve. I also noticed that you got a bit of heat when you were first selected for Ireland, in my opinion, maybe more so than anyone else. It had been done before you, so I did notice that, and I thought you dealt with that really well. And also, there's been some after you as well. You know, Chiefs teammate, and a couple of guys. Yeah. Did you give them, some advice, and did they have a chat to you around, making that decision to align themselves with Ireland?
No, I didn't really chat to them. They sort of asked what was it like playing here and stuff like that. And like I said, so look, if you put in the hard work and play very well for your club and, do exactly what they want you to do, without a doubt, you'll get picked on form regardless. And like you said, there's a lot of heat came on to me when I first came in, and it was a given. I knew what I was getting myself into, and the only way I was going to be able to try and put that down a bit, or try and put a lid on it a little bit, it's just the way I play and how I play on my approach myself on the pitch, and how I give back to my community, because my community over in Galway and my team in Connacht, they're the reason why I've actually got the push to go play for Ireland, because, they're my teammates. They're the ones that helped me play, and the community had your back. And, the more you do for them, the better it is for yourself as well. So you get a bit of support from your community, a lot of support from your community and your friends and your teammates. So, I say it all the time, people have opinions, and rightly so they do. Yeah, but it's like we always do as professional rugby. We just try and block that out and just focus on what the task is ahead of us.
Mm. Oh, nice. You've had some memorable moments with Ireland, and you've got a game against the All Blacks coming up, and with Japan soon, and you've beaten them in 2018, and I was there for the start of it. I got to watch the start of it before I had to go jump on a plane. What can you take from that game? And I think you mentioned before also, that you were the second team to beat the All Blacks. So it's become, it's not a big myth anymore. What can you take from that year in 2018 for this new group coming through?
I think the thing, when you play such a world-class team like the All Blacks, you can't have no stone unturned when you're preparing for the All Blacks. I made sure that everything, or as a team, we made sure that we got across our work, every single day. And with a team like the ABs, it only takes one mistake for them to catch on it and then take the ball and pump you by whatever, how many points they want to pump you by. But that's why they're world-class, because one little mistake you do as a group, they could pounce on it and score the try from one end to the other. So as a group, we just made sure that we try and be as tidy as we can, as in not trying to give away possession to them because they're so good, you know what I mean? Even on the other side of the ball is making sure that we make sure that everybody's across and knowing that anything can happen here. Someone could make a line break here and we have to scramble back. And because, like, you know, you got to be on your toes with Davies. Like, they're world class for a reason. And, you know, some days it works, some days it doesn't. You know what I mean? Sure. When you're on the wrong side of it, it's not a good feeling. But when you're on the good side of it, it's a memorable feeling. And I was lucky enough to be able to be in that memorable feeling in Aviva.
Mm. What was it like? You know, you've talked about before, you know, first it was the All Blacks. And like you say, every kid has that dream. And then you get to beat them. What was the feeling after the game? For you personally,
before I was actually very nervous and emotional at the time, but I kept it in. You know what I mean? Because that's the team that we're playing. Like the team I was playing against now is like that was the team I wanted to play for. Mm. But now I'm up against him. I'm privileged to be able to play against him, and an honor to play against him. And when the game was finished, I felt relieved. Like, I don't know, I felt happy. I felt very satisfied and the work and the hard yards you've put in every single day, not just from that week but the years before that, you know, trying to get to where I was that day. I just reflected back on it from all the, you know, the hardship I had with my family and the hard work to be able to get to where I am, and to be able to get that result on that day was just, it was like a weight lifted off your shoulder. Because such, you know, like, you know, they're a world-class team, and obviously I wasn't there when they beat Chicago, so I didn't know the feeling. But then when we played them at Aviva, that was, honestly, it was so good. I honestly get goosebumps when they were doing the haka in front of me. I was getting goosebumps, mad goosebumps. And I was like, Jesus, this is surreal. Like, this is surreal. This is so cool. And obviously we've played them in counties when we had the freeway halftime, but it was never the same. You know what I mean? It's not the same.
No.
But when you're international level, it's just, I was just like, man, this is what you work for. This is what you woke up at 5 o'clock just to go to work and go to training. This is what all of it's got, you worked for. So here's the day that you're going to try and perform and help the boys out to win. So yeah.
When we met before the game, you know, we caught up. I was there the week leading up to the game, and I walked around Dublin a bit. I was, you know, early in the morning because of my jet lag, and then I saw your big face on one of the store fronts, and I think that was the time for me that I thought, geez, he's big here. And literally, it took up the whole building. You know, your photo of you. And then we caught up, you know, we had dinner. You seemed really relaxed, you know, beforehand. You know, it was again, you hadn't changed. It was, you know, like we caught up, you know, come in, just come in. We went down and what do you want? Yeah, no, yeah, whatever you want, man, whatever you want. I was going, oh, no, man. having a steak, you having a steak. I was the one that was, I didn't want to, you know, disrupt your preparation and worry about it.
Nah. Nah, man. Keep, like, you know, you try and be as normal what you do every day. Like you say, try and be yourself as much as you can. And that's exactly it. I try and do that every here, every single day with the boys. Mm. You know, how I'm loud and sometimes annoying at times with the boys. I'm exactly the same here, man. Like, and nothing's changed here.
that's who you are. That's the good thing. That's the positive thing. Eh? You just keep it real. You are who you are. And I think that's why everyone loves you for it. So, mate, make sure you keep that up.
Always.
You know, we go back to our time with counties too, and you say those 5 o'clock starts. So he didn't go up to those 5 o'clock starts all the time in those academy trainings. That's why I had to come and chat to you.
Man, those academy days, oh my gosh. Man, it was like I had to drive from out west, which was freaking, I don't know, 30, 35 minutes from there to get to Pukekohe.
Yeah.
But man, those mornings were grim, man. No aircon, no heaters, cold bar, cold barbell. Oh man, it was a man. Those were hard days. Those were hard days.
Well, figured out. You know, only just recently how far Ranui is from Pukie is, even from where I'm living. Ran, geez, that's ages away. I can see what he's talking about.
Oh man, that was so long. Oh man, I was like, geez, this is a long drive. Drive there to Pukekohe, back to Mangere, back out to Padamahoe, back to Ranui.
Well, that was it. Like you'd leave in the morning, and then you wouldn't have to. You wouldn't be able to go back because, like you said, you either had, you know, club training that night, or you'd straight into, like you said, Mangere to go to work, and then you'd leave at the when it's dark, and then you'd get you know, back out west when it's dark.
Dark, exactly.
So you'd be used to it over there in the UKR.
That's exactly it. Wake up early hours in the morning, won't be back till it's dark as well.
Oh no, it was awesome in our chat. It was a simple chatter, just giving you that opportunity to, oh, this is what could happen if you commit to it. The ability was there. And you can see the competitive nature is there. You still have that in your trainings too?
Oh, man, the lads hate playing against me, man. They hate playing against me. I fry their ears off in the Get State game, and we play against them in our provincials. No, it's just, you know how it is. You know, you just got to fight for every bit of it, and whatever 100%. little win you get. And now the boys, they understand, you know, we're on the same team. I'll do the exact same thing for them and try and fight for every inch. And when they're opposite, good luck.
Look, we have to talk about, you know, this year. It's amazing. Again, another opportunity for us over here to be so proud of you when you were named in the British and Irish Lions. You want to tell us a little bit about that and how that came about? And also, what was it like when you got named?
Oh, man, that week it was. Because I was injured leading up to Six Nations, which is the last campaign before they picked the British and Irish team. And then I was actually, the two lads who were playing in front of me, Robbie Henshaw and Gary Ringrose, they were playing unbelievable. And Andy Farrell picks on, you know, lads who are pick on form, which is, you know, which is right. And the two lads were playing very well. So I was getting, you know, I wasn't getting the foot in because the two lads were going well. And unfortunately, our teammate Gary got injured in our second to last game. He had an injury. And I was lucky enough to be able to get that opportunity to be back with the team against England on the last game. And the England game didn't last long. I got a red card. Man, I don't know what it is, but like, I seem to make history again by being the only player to get two red cards. Same player to get two red cards. Oh, man. And I only played, I think it was like 60 minutes, I think. So I sort of had a feeling, British and Irish Lions was a bit of a reach for me because I wasn't playing constantly. But that game against England, I played very well with Robbie. Robbie played exceptional that game. But I thought I played well. I played okay as well, bar the red card. So when they had the team naming, I think it was like 2 weeks after, maybe 2 weeks after, and it's obviously huge here to make the British and Irish team. It's massive. And we had a training on Friday. We had a week off, but we had training on Friday. And our training finished early, and they knew that the team was being named. So no one knows, you know what I mean? No one knows if you're in the team beforehand. So no one knows the team bar the coaches that are there. So everyone finds out at the same time. So everyone's watching it live. So I had, like, they put it on the change room, and I was like, man, I got nervous for no reason. I don't know why I just got nervous. Cause I was just like, geez, I knew I had a slight chance, but I knew there was a lot of other good players out there as well that, you know, that was going to would have had a better chance. And I just walked out of the change room. I was like, I can't watch this. You know, I just can't watch. So I went and sat outside and watch the academy lads train out on the pitch. So I was watching there, and I was with our captain Jared. We were just watching, and I knew the team was getting named at the time, and I just heard this massive uproar from the change room, just everyone shouting. And I was like, Jared turned around, and I looked at Jared, and Jared was like, congrats. And I was like, what? Because congrats, you're in the team. And I go, what? So I sat there, and I was shocked. Like, I didn't know what to do. I was so shocked. I just sat there, and everyone came out of the change room and started congratulating me. And I just got emotional because I was like, geez, this is huge. This is massive. Yeah. It's a huge honor to be able to be named the team. And man, I had gym session that afternoon, and I just turned around to our trainer. I was like, man, I'm sorry, but I'm over the moon at the moment. I'm like, my emotionals are very high. I don't know what I felt. I don't know what I feel like. And I was like, can I go home? And he's like, yeah, go home. So I got in the car and I called Kayla and told her, and she obviously knew as well, and just started sharing tears over the phone. Started sharing tears over the phone. And I was like, man, like, who would have thought, you know, a South Auckland boy from Rewa, you know, making the British and Irish team, coming from nothing to be able to reach these goals was huge, man. And like to this day, I still get goosebumps thinking about that day as well, because I called mum and dad. Mum and dad were over the moon as well, crying over the phone and just, like, you know, thanking the Lord, doing a prayer over the phone. And yeah, it was huge. It was so big. And that was just the start of it, obviously. So you knew you made the team. And then we only had two games before everyone met up in the Irish, British and Irish camp, and we only had two club teams games left, and I played in both of them, and we're off to Jersey for our camp. And it was cool, man. It was honestly, I still talk about it this day, it's one of the best trips I've ever been a part of, or one of the best teams I've ever been a part of. Just the culture they create, the group, you know, having four different countries that you play against every single year come together to be one team is huge. And in fairness, man, we had such great bunch of lads in our team. So good. Like even though during, like, you know, it's lockdown, we're in lockdown in South Africa, it was during lockdown here, but we still managed to get along with each other and enjoyed our time together. And I honestly, like, I don't say it lightly, it's one of the best trips I've ever had. And I could only imagine what it would have been like if there was no lockdown. But it was so good to be a part of, so good to be a part of that team.
Did you ever think that you'd, you know, obviously you'd been playing with Ireland for a while, you know, when did you, you know, think about, oh, I could be part of this British and Irish Lions team?
Like, I honestly didn't think of it a lot. It wasn't until after the November series, I think, going into the Six Nations, because I knew going into Six Nations, that's a big campaign for people to put their hand up to be in the British and Irish team. And it wasn't until when the Six Nations was during the Six Nations and the end of Six Nations, I started, like, you know, when you're playing in a campaign or playing for a team, you want to put your hand up, you want to be at the, you know, in those teams, like, those are the, when you're playing here for so long, those are the teams you want to be a part of. And you obviously don't say it out loud to everybody, but you keep it inside and be an internal goal for yourself and try and set that goal. And yeah, it was just, honestly, I was so over the moon when my name got named. And it was actually quite handy enough because my name was the second name to be named out. I didn't realize it was alphabetical order as well. So,
no, so I was like, oh. We're so proud over here too when we heard it. And obviously you got heaps of messages, and as you said, you know, the journey that you've been on and still on. It was just part of that, you know, those achievements. But you see, yeah, you talked about the lockdown, because that was, I've got down here also as one of my questions, like, you know, you played the Sharks and then you were meant to move somewhere else and then you ended up playing the Sharks. How did that, you know, how was it over there when, because they had a pretty brutal lockdown as well.
Yeah, it was, who were we meant to play? It was actually, yeah, we played the Sharks And then we were meant to play another team. I forgot who we were meant to play. And then we moved to Bulls to play the Sharks again. And that week was a crazy week. We had a training week over in Joburg where we were staying. And I think it was the day before. No, it was the day of the game. The day of the game, we had a positive person in our group, in our camp. So it knocked out, I don't know, the team that was named, and knocked out half of the team for close contact. And everyone was in their rooms, like, you know, prepping for a game, but like food was getting delivered to the rooms, to, you know, what you normally eat for your pre-match and breakfast and lunch. And we didn't know if the game was going ahead. It was huge. It was like, you know, we didn't know the game was going ahead. So we were just sitting there, just acting normal in our own rooms. No one was allowed to leave. So everyone was just in their own rooms, just doing whatever they were doing. And we were meant to be on the bus at 10 past six. And we were sitting outside our rooms at, I think it was like 5 past 6, not knowing, haven't heard anything, what was going on, if the game was going on or the game was cancelled. We don't know anything. And we obviously heard about some of the boys being, you know, tapped on the shoulder saying, no, you're not playing, you're close contact. Mm. And I think at the time they were still trying to look through videos to see who was close contact. So I think everyone got the head nod to be like, all right, you guys, you know, we're good to go on the bus. So we all walked on the bus and we didn't know who the team was because half of the team was already knocked out. And so we got on the bus and we had a forwards bus and a backs bus. And we were like, lads, who's playing? Who's starting? And we didn't know. And our physio just goes, right. He obviously got the team of Gats and he's like, right, you're 9, you're 10, you're 11, you're 12. And then you're 15. And poor lad, I think it was Josh Adams who's been playing back-to-back games for 80 minutes. He goes, and you're at 15. And we're like, oh gosh, here we go. And we're looking around and go, who's that reserve? We go, we only got one reserve and that's a 10. And he's on the bench.
Oh my goodness.
it was so crazy that day. We actually went out and played very well. It was actually so good. But during the lockdown, it was just, you know, those are the sort of things that you sort of had to make sure you prep, knowing that, you know, anything can happen. And I think the good thing about it is that the lads were very, very good at switching on when they needed to switch on, made fun of things when they didn't, when we need to make fun of things. But no, that day was crazy. It was so good. It was so good. Those were one of my memorable days, not knowing who the team was and just naming the team, the best team on the bus was so hilarious.
What's the, obviously, yeah, what you say, the British and Irish Lions, it's huge. What are the major differences around, obviously, playing for Ireland and the British and Irish Lions? It's a big, big beast when it gets moving, isn't it?
It is. It's huge, man. Like, the amount of support you get from the British and Irish Lions is a joke. It is a joke. You could imagine what, you know, your own country supporting
we've heard,
you.
We've heard about the financial support that you guys
did. Happy birthday. No, just the supporters are unbelievable, you know. Like, you could see why it's so big because four countries coming in and there's just a sea of red of just people just putting all the just a sea of red just going across the Europe, and it's so good. It's honestly so good, and like you said, it's different from when you're playing for Ireland to British and Irish Lions. It's just another step, a step up to what you know. And I obviously got a shock because you play against these lads in every Six Nations campaign or November series we play in. But to be able to play against or to train against some of those best players in the world, man, it was unbelievable. Like our training sessions we had, man, there was no shortage of hitting people. Oh my gosh, it was just full on contact every training. It was good, man. Exactly. I was like, okay, I'm happy. but no, it was good, man. It was very, very good. We played Japan and Edinburgh, and that was the first time we had fans. So over in England, they were slowly opening up, and we had a handful of fans in Edinburgh. Oh man, it was so loud. It was honestly, the supporters were crazy, man. It was so crazy. And that was my first game for the Lions against Japan, so it was very good.
Who did you kick with? And did you just say, you know, do the different countries coming together, do they just hang in the countries, or did you, knowing you, you would have kicked around with anyone you could?
Oh man, you know me, man. I kick around with anybody, whoever was there. Like, I got along with, I kick around with them all the time,
whether they want to or not.
Yeah, exactly. They had no choice. I got along with Owen Farrell there. Got along with Jamie George. Jamie George is a hilarious man. Anthony Watson. Like, most of the English boys, the Welsh boys, as well. Got along with Sanj, Liam Williams, and Hamish Watson. Man, he's such a good person, man. Hamish Watson. Oh, he's a beast as well. But you know, we had, like, the good thing about our team, we had such good bunch of players, good people. Like, it wasn't just the player and itself, but we had good people. And I think that was the biggest takeaway, was that even the boys that were in previous tours, they were saying, man, the group of lads that we had were such good group of players, but good people as well. And I think that's what made the tours, because the group of lads were so good and everyone got along with each other. And we have our kit man who's always there, and we go to his room the night before the game, and man, poor lad, right, poor Ryla in his room. But yeah, we go there and just kick there, have a cup of teas, eat chocolate and talk. It's good. Very good.
Nah, some great memories, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you play your first test. What was it like when you got named, and did you have more time to prepare for this one?
Yes, I did. It was obviously different when you're playing the midweek games. Prepping every day and making sure your body's okay. But no, I was very happy when I got named in the last test as well. You know, it's nothing better when you're getting named in a decider test as well, to be able to go out there and play a bit of rugby and enjoy it. But it was, you know, it's a physical game, as you would expect against the Saffir boys. Mm. And man, you know, they're no world champs for a reason. They're such a good team, and they obviously toppled us in that last game. But we had opportunities, like, you know, as players, when you don't take them, you know, it's all about fine margins and whoever can take the opportunities when they can. So other than that, I was just, honestly, I was honored and privileged to be able to call myself a test lion. So that's cool.
Yeah, so say it with pride, Tools. Say it with pride. because we watch, again, they come under a bit of criticism, I'd say, both the style of rugby that, you know, both sides were playing. Did you practice a lot of the high balls? You get the turtle out?
Man, you know, I stay in the middle of the pitch, so I don't have to catch those high balls. There's no way they're going to kick it to me in the middle of the pitch. I'm standing in the middle. I'm not going to stand on the edge. Oh, man, like, you know, they're good at what they do. You know, like, they're very good at what they do. And why change when you're winning games? You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's a lot of criticism, but, you know, they have all the success of what they've been doing for the last couple of years, and the last couple of months they've been playing it. So I wouldn't complain if I was them anyway.
Yeah, no, that's right. In the end, test rugby is about winning.
That's exactly,
you
know, it.
How you win kind of comes secondary, and they've kind of said that. We'll just talk around your life after rugby, although it's, you know, still a little bit away, and you've signed until 2023.
Yeah, until the end of World Cup, yeah.
You're still a young man, and, you know, your last World Cup, you had an injury and one of those red cards you talked about.
Oh, man, I got to stay away from those red cards.
You know, hey, look, you know, it's a different level now than what it used to be. Yeah. So, yeah, you just got to adapt, and you're good at that, so you'll figure it out. Are you thinking about what's next now, or you're gonna just write it out and, you know, see what happens?
Man, I've been, honestly, the last couple of years, I've always just trying to been riding it out. Like, I know it's been there. You know how, like, as a player, you know it's there, and you just don't want to look there. you just don't want to look. Yeah, it's like, you just don't want to go there because you don't want to miss moments of your rugby career at that time or at this time. But I'm at the stage where you obviously have to look there. Like, you know, like, just can't be afraid of doing something. You know, you'd rather do mistakes now while you're learning than when you're trying to do it. So I have been trying to look at stuff, trying to do stuff, life after rugby. And that's how, like, the good thing about here is our PDM girls, our development people here have been, through Arupa, have been very, very good. And they're so helpful for the players as well. And they have tuitions for studies or whatever you're doing, a business or looking to just invest into properties and stuff like that. And they have all the contacts they do. And when you look at some of the lads who are doing and still playing rugby, they're very successful. Like, they still seem to be enjoying their rugby, playing at the highest level, and yet still doing things outside of rugby where, you know, it takes a while for an Islander to be able to try and tap his toes in that way. You know, when you get so comfortable, you're just like, oh, I don't know if I know how to do it. You're just too hesitant to do it. And I think it was like a couple of weeks ago, my PDM hit me up and she's like, I need to talk to you. And I go, yeah, I'll talk to you. But she managed to grab me from after training when I was in the changing room. She grabbed me and she's like, come on, sit down. So we sat down and we just started getting some planning in place. And I felt good coming out of that meeting. You know, when you feel good, it's like, oh, it feels good. And, you know, that's probably the first step, is trying to talk and trying to prepare yourself. And then the next step for me is obviously trying to tap my toe and to put my foot into whatever I'm looking at and how I'm going to do it and, you know, just get a feel for it. I always used to think that just because I worked in a bank for so long, I was like, oh, I'll go back to it. But, like, I'm just like, nah, I don't know if I can. And just to try and do something different and try and come out of your comfort zone, as you know. And I'll soon to find out what it's going to be like.
No, that's awesome. You talk about, like, you're right. And I'm going through that at the moment. You know, that's why I'm chatting to you and people like you who, you know, at this stage in your career, you've achieved so much, and you can, the opportunity to use those contacts. And that's what I've learned, you know, talking to other successful sports people like yourself who have done that. You know, they're unapologetic, I think, is that, yeah, no, I've got to use what I've got at the moment, because if I don't, then no one will remember what I've done in the past. I totally encourage you to use the context you have, the help, because, you know, you've got rugby people all over the place that want to help people. And, you know, you're a good, vivacious man, and, you know, you know a lot and you've achieved a lot. So, you know, why not use that to open up some doors for yourself to, you know, take advantage of, you know, what you've achieved for your family. Because, you know, as we talked about before we started recording, so nothing's getting cheaper back here, man.
That's exactly it. Nothing's getting cheaper. That's fair.
You know? And fair. You're not going to be in rugby. You're going to be out of rugby a lot longer than you're going to be in it. So
that's very true.
You know, so how's your networking skills? You getting out of the corners and talking to your spots?
In fairness, I went on a – I actually happened to go on a business dinner and a lunch in London or in Manchester. And it sort of opened my eyes. Man, there's a lot of people out there who love, like you said, love rugby and just love to help you out and try and make you join the team. And it's very similar to how they approach things, to what you do in the rugby's perspective in a team environment. And it was actually very good, because I sat there and I was talking away and answering a few questions here and there. And after I came out of the two-day speaking I was doing, I came out of there just thinking, geez, there's a lot more outside of rugby that I need to look at. And That's sort of how it got me to go to the PDM, which is like, oh geez, I actually really, really need to have a hard think of what I really want to do after life after rugby, and something that I enjoy doing instead of just, just doing
it. I don't want to go back to the bank, man. Unless you're owning the bank.
Yeah, that's fair. I want to own the bank before.
I don't want to go back working at the bank. I want to own the bank.
Yeah, no, that's, man, that's what I'm certainly open my eyes. And I was just, the company that I was chatting to, United Living, man, it's so good. Like, there's the good thing about them is that they have so much branches as well, which, you know, it's not only that small side of thing they're looking at, like as in their company, but they have a lot of other branches that lead into their company, which you're sort of like, geez, there's a lot, like I said, there's a lot more out there that you got to learn, and a lot more you got to figure out what you want to do.
Yeah, that key is getting out of that comfort zone now.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Get out of the comfort zone, you'll be all right.
getting out of using your gaming headphones all the time. And, actually, I should be making vocals.
Oh man, yeah. When you ask for the headphones, I say, "I've only got my gaming headphones."
You got to try and fit it in between saving the world.
That's exactly it. When the duty calls, I'm out.
Nice. Oh well, hey, look, you know, at least you're starting to think about it, because that's the key. And the people I'm talking about, it's been such a big learning curve for me, you know, is that you got to find something, because you've got the opportunity that, you know, you're passionate about and you want to do, rather than go into something that you have to do.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And like you say, you've got time now. It's better to do it now. It keeps you busy. Yeah, and probably keep you a bit more balanced.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It will give me more time off my PlayStation, which I need to be doing.
Everyone's got their thing. So, Liad, what advice would you give other boys, you know, about following your pathway to international rugby? Because it's a bit harder now. We know it's because of the residencies. Been lengthened to 5 years. You know, what advice would you give people who still want to chase that opportunity? Because, you know, there's still opportunities to do it.
Yeah. I think the one thing I've learned over the time that I've obviously played my part where I am now is, like you said, it's just nothing's guaranteed. You know, if you think you can do it, regardless of what pathway you take, if you think you can do it, just go for it and put every bit of work or whatever you're doing into where you want your life or your rugby career to be. And it obviously took, you know, a few people to chat to and understand. And if you have a good, great group around you and coaches like I did with you, I was lucky enough to have you around and be able to give me some word of wisdom. And man, I just went for it. Just have faith in and believe in yourself, and just go for it. Like, you know, I seen some of the guys here in Ireland who born here in Ireland but playing in different countries as well, and you know, they've obviously taken a different step to where they wanted to be. But it's you know, they're achieving their goals. You know, they're going to play at the highest level, regardless of where you're going or where it takes you. You can still achieve it. And if obviously a player in New Zealand who wants to play international rugby and have to take a different pathway, don't think about what you have to do. Just keep taking, you know, day by day, and set yourself goals on what you want to achieve. And you know, anything can happen. Anything can happen. And, you know, if you believe in yourself so much, you know, only good things will come. And you obviously have hardships there, but that's where you grow strong and you overcome those hardships and go with it again.
Oh, that's good advice. And you know, just to keep working at it. And I think also you talked around, because it's what I'm finding in the business side as well, there's good people around you, you know, people that have been there and done it before. That you can count on, because that's important. Yeah. You know,
that's exactly it.
Because you got to talk to people that have done it before, rather than people that haven't done it before, but read some books, maybe.
Man, I'm like I said, like I'm always happy. Like there's a few guys that come over to Connacht as well. Some island boys and guys who are just coming over here for a few years, and you know, I just always tell them, like, you know, like, you know, you try and explain to them how you've been here and for so long and what you see, and you tell them, you know, it's never easy where we are, especially in Connacht. Like, obviously can relate to it. It's not easy. Nothing's given. Mm. And you just got to work for it and fight for every inch that you get. And if you believe in what you can do, then just go for it. And, you know, and that's exactly how I try and talk to some of the island boys that come here and just like, look, you know, like you said, our backs against the wall from day one, man. It's whether you're going to try and stay at the back of that wall, you're going to fight your way through it and go, man. And the island boys understand and they enjoy it. So, yeah.
Nice. And they're giving good advice for someone that's done it and is still doing it. So you're leading in that aspect, Dawson. You're keeping us all proud over here. Don't worry about that. And we wish you all the best for your internationals coming up and your career and, you know, and what's next too. I know we've talked a bit about, you know, what's next. So, you know, and I look forward to seeing, you know, where you go with that. And I'll keep a tab on you too. Don't worry about that.
I know you will. I know you definitely will. That's why I appreciate you, man. You've always got our backs regardless. Oh. Thank you very much. Thank you.
No, thanks for coming on us, and thanks for your time, Alofaku, and we'll catch up again soon, I'm sure. Take care.
Thank you much. Thanks to you.
Thanks for listening. Make sure to check out Victual's website at www.victual.co.nz so you can rebalance your lifestyle with ancient wisdom and ingredients.